Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of the Pinch Hitter podcast with myself, Tom Penn from the Pinch Hitter, and
Stuart Russell, special guest every week on the Pinch Hitter podcast.
Special guest, co-presenter, Stuart Russell. And this week we are going to be having a review of the latest, the third test match, South Africa against England in Port Elizabeth. We are going to be looking at some of the franchise tournaments that are out there, dipping into the Under-19 Cricket World Cup, and also we are launching a new feature, a regular feature on the Pinch Hitter podcast, which is going to be looking at the over that was. So very, very exciting times here at the Pinch Hitter. So let's kick off straight away with the test match, which finished yesterday morning in Port Elizabeth with an innings victory for England in an away test match. And we don't see that very often, do we, Terence?
We don't see it very often. We haven't seen it since 2011, in
Correct.
Fact. The very start of 2011 in that great series down under, I believe.
Correct.
Looking really good. Looked like a really, really good side. Properly put together. Batted, bowled, fielded brilliantly. Ollie the Pope, Ollie, to give him his full name, Ollie the Business Pope. Scored what we're hearing could be the first of many test match hundreds.
Rumours.
But yeah, comprehensive, wasn't it?
Just very good. Just very, very good performance. I am saying, kind of just put a little bit of pinch of salt with it all, that it is against a very poor South Africa team.
Yeah.
But
it's not just against any poor South Africa team, it's against a poor South Africa team who even their quality players haven't showed up.
Yeah.
Brendan Philander, since he got announced that he was signing for Simon Stout on the Cole Pack deal, has just walked away from.
Yeah, well, he can't run because, as Joss Butler pointed out, he's a little rotund nowadays. But as you say, some of them having turned up, and KG Rabada will be asked not to turn up.
he has been asked to stay away
in Johannesburg.
What do you think of that?
Well, brilliant. Just great, great content. Our WhatsApp group was going wild. And just for the record, that's not a WhatsApp group with just myself and Terence. There are other people.
That's where we get all of our content from. So if it was just us, then
yeah,
it would be in trouble.
It would not work. But a couple of things for me was the great debate that Sky had.
Twice.
We're talking about the one in the studio and
was,
the one in the...
They had the debate outside where Holding and Nasser essentially reenacted the whole thing.
Yeah,
including getting in each other's face, talking about
personal space. Yeah.
How unacceptable it was to get in someone's personal space. They had that great debate outside. Ian Ward's just watching.
Yeah, smiling, just watching, just loving it all.
And then they went inside, and Nick Knight and Rob Key had the exact same debate, just a bit worse.
Yeah.
And David Malan was just watching.
Just watching. And yeah, so both times, very happy just to sit back and watch it. And
I'm more than happy to not watch KG Rabada bowling in a test match, the world's best fast bowler bowling in a test match against England, if it means we get to watch a whole lunch break of pure nonsense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the other thing in that lunch break as well was they put together a beautiful little 1 minute clip of all Rabada's ridiculous celebrations over the last few years, I guess, all the times that he's
lost 24 months
demerit points from. So it's just very, very entertaining, and I just think that for me it's up there with Adi Bayor for Arsenal against Man City or for Man City against Arsenal rather. And
very Tamuri Ketsubaya.
And I'm certainly not going down the. I'd love to see ridiculous celebrations in any sport, and cricket. You know, it is a gentleman's game, and it's very much done that. Particularly when you look at clips of old games, and they barely shake.
Barely talk to
each other. Barely shake hands with their teammates when they take a wicket. Obviously Rabada has only got himself to blame because he had some demerit points already, so he's a bit of a fool for doing it. And they had it on Tuffers and Vaughan again last night as well, where Michael Vaughan was taking the the approach which NASA was taking, I think Brett Lee has taken, and various other players, who seem to think that because it's not good for cricket, because it's not good for the sport, because the sport's struggling to get people through the doors at the moment, and, you know, 5-day tests, 4-day tests, whatever, that Kagiso Rabada should be allowed to play in Johannesburg. Yeah. And as I have said, where do you draw the line? If someone is a mass murderer, but he's a good leg spinner with a good googly, well, he can play. So it's a shame because I love celebrations, and I think Rabada's a great bowler, and yes, it will make the test match that little bit less spicy. But you're an idiot. You know the rules.
What became abundantly clear from that little clip that Sky showed is that every single one of his demerit points has been given for basically the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, all invading batsman's personal space, all screaming in their face, all just on the cusp of being a bit of a dickhead.
Yes.
Without actually really being it.
Yes.
Like, just don't do it. Like, it's so easy to not do it. Like,
yeah.
You could, if he was just going to run down the pitch, crouch and scream at the stumps, like, you could just run, like, you could run anywhere and do that. Like,
yeah.
It doesn't have to be in Joe Root's face at all.
Yeah, no, completely. Completely.
I don't get it. And also, like, I would have put my life savings on Michael Vaughan taking the approach that Michael Vaughan took to that.
Yeah.
It was so
predictable.
Predictable.
Yeah.
But it's immediately obvious what Michael Vaughan's opinion on that would be. All right, back for the game. It needs to be celebrated. Obviously, everyone wants to watch him celebrate, and everyone wants to watch him bowling quickly at our bowlers, at our batters.
But good old Michael, you know, hopefully got some impressions on his social media accounts.
Yeah.
Off the back of yet another slightly controversial.
He's not an IG pep, is he, Rabada?
Is that one of Vaughan's group? Yeah, because
he
does like to promote them, doesn't he?
Yeah, he
does. Is Pope one?
I think he might be.
Because Vaughan's already pushing him for the number three spot.
Is he?
Straight away. Let's not forget, Ollie Pope has just made his first test century. At number six.
Yeah.
And when he batted at number four for England on his debut, everyone was saying it's ridiculous, he's never batted that high up.
Michael Vaughan was one of those people, was he?
I'm sure he was.
Yeah.
I have absolutely no doubt
he was. No doubt that he was.
And we actually did a pinch hitter trivia part of over the last week, must have been on Saturday or Sunday after Pope had got his first ton, was listing all the England players this century who have only got one century. And so there's some interesting names in there.
Some great names in there.
And needless to say, a great number of them, in fact, let's say all of them, didn't nail down the number three spot. let's give Popey time. I love him. I think the way he's batting with the tail is incredible. In both tests that he's played in
the
South
way
Africa.
It was the way he accelerated in this innings, wasn't it? When he
started,
basically, we were talking about it on the WhatsApp group while he was doing it on Friday. He just basically started playing French cricket when he essentially played like a pull shot, but he had turned 180 degrees before he played it. So he essentially played a pull shot.
Yeah.
Over where a backstop would be.
Yeah.
Just
great.
Just
great to see it. And the thing about his innings as well, which was interesting, was the different paces he played at. So initially when him and Stokes came together and Maharaj was causing quite a few problems. But him and Stokes played at a decent lick to get the scoring rate up. Dependable Denley had famously made 25 off 100 balls.
A dentury, as that's
a dentury. I like it. We keep them coming. So they got the run rate up, which was really important. But then when Stokes kind of got a bit bored after he got his century,
he started doing quite a lot of weird stuff.
Yeah,
he played quite a few airy kind of drives, and
he got dropped by Nokia.
He got dropped by Nokia
very soon before he got out.
Very, very shortly
before
he got out. And then he played that sort of weird, airy cut, and it was one of those wickets where you go, what? Like you think, oh, well, that must be a bump ball.
Yeah.
Or it must be a crowd catch or something. And then he just walked off.
Yeah.
And how has he gone from being so in control to just literally lofting a cut to...
Yeah, you wonder if maybe he's point.
Sort of point, yeah.
Gully. You wonder if maybe he's a bit knackered. It's been well publicised what's happened with his dad in South Africa.
Yeah.
But also
love his new celebration, by the
way.
Oh
yeah, with his finger. Half the fourth finger down.
Yeah.
Because his dad had his heart cut off because he couldn't afford to have surgery.
No, his dad was a rugby league player in New Zealand.
That's the one.
And he had an injury. He had like an injury to his finger or something, mm-hmm. and I think he got infected, and they were saying that he would be out for the next 6 months or so, or however long it was going to be, loads of playing time that he missed. So we just told him to amputate the top of his finger so he'd carry on playing.
Hence why Stokesy does his new celebration. He does it in all the team photos as well.
Yeah, he does.
But
nice touch.
But yeah, so I wonder if he's a bit knackered. You know, he obviously had a ridiculous year last year. But yeah, just seeing him at the end of that innings. Where England still needed to keep on batting for a bit, and he really looked like he kind of was a bit done with it.
At least he did it on 120 this time.
Exactly.
Rather than the rest of them who started doing it on sort of 30.
Yeah, and said, right, let's go from there. But yeah, Pope and him did brilliantly. Sammy Curran did a.
Sammy Curran does.
Well, I said on Twitter, it wasn't. It's no longer a cameo; it's a Samio. Yeah. It's about time he trademarked that. I think he got 44 in double quick time.
He's in the process of becoming the world's best bits and pieces cricketer, isn't he?
Absolutely.
Bits and pieces cricketers. You think of your Luke Wrights,
yep.
who do neither thing particularly mm-hmm. well. Sam Curran, you sort of think, well, if his job is going to be quick 40, three wickets, take the new ball. Gets them when it's swinging. That kind of bits and pieces cricketer, you wouldn't quite call it an all-rounder.
No.
Like he's not kind of going to fulfil a role with bat or with ball.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can come in and make valid contributions with both of them to an extent.
And happy days.
Yeah, happy days.
Happy days indeed. I mean, I gave him a 7 out of 10 for his performance in this test, which a few people thought was a little bit high.
He went under the radar a bit.
Yeah, but he's got that 44 he made in the first innings. I think the partnership him and Pope had, he was scoring 80-85% of the runs and at a good lick. So he was keeping that going. He did bowl some utter gashness during the test. But he also got out Quentin de Kock during the flurry of wickets on Sunday morning.
We are gonna get that with him, aren't we?
Yeah.
He bowls wicket taking balls because he gets so much swing off out of his hand. He bowls wicket taking balls, he's gonna take wickets, but I'm saying this on WhatsApp. I'm not having him with the new ball in a test match when you've got Mark Woods in there, raring to go.
Yeah.
We've got pressure on, wickets already tumbling.
Yeah.
And then we've made them follow on. And you've got Sam Curran taking the new ball. I don't think that should be his role.
Yeah, fair enough, it is swinging lots.
Yeah.
But maybe it wasn't.
But even if it's swinging loads, I'd still rather have Mark Wood or Geoff Archer or whoever, or Broad, because Curran took the ball over Broad in the West Indies last winter.
Yeah.
But he does bowl so much filth.
Yeah.
But also he bowls the old golden arm wonder ball.
But you know who else did that in his early test cricket career? Jimmy Anderson.
Yeah.
So he's following a well trodden path.
Yeah.
And talking of treading, we look at Paul Curran a bits and pieces player. If he could add another string to his bow, he's very light footed, and so as a left arm bowler, we could do with him having heavier footprints and actually making more impact on the pitch.
Did
for,
you see
for the spinners to go into?
There's a brilliant bit on Sky. They just kind of did a replay of what looked like a fairly innocuous bad throw from Bess out on the boundary.
Yeah,
threw it back, and Joss Butler had to kind of move out in front of the stumps a couple of paces.
I did see that, but
and to take the catch above his head, and it just looked like a bad throw. And then when they showed the replay, it became immediately apparent that what Bess had done was throw it from the boundary across an off spinner's length on the pitch.
Very
Butler had just shuffled his way across the pitch right on a length to take the catch, which is a beautiful bit of skullduggery.
Yeah, no,
somewhere in between. Using Sam Curran's footprints and using some sandpaper.
But not cheating.
Yeah,
no, definitely. I think maybe we could, there's a whole pod there in in just running on the pitch. I think Rabada also
just running on a pitch.
Yeah, us running on a pitch, or the players. So Rabada and his celebration for Root. Yeah. I think there could be an argument there that he was running on the pitch. There was a famous moment last summer in the Ashes when, I don't know if you remember it, Headingley Test, when Nathan Lyon missed a crucial run out.
Did he?
Yeah, he did. Tim Payne and our good friend, the Reverend David Warner, started running up to celebrate with Nathan Lyon, assuming he was going to take the wicket, take the veils off.
Yeah.
And Tim Payne did run on the pitch, and I think that's becoming a bigger issue.
It is. Yeah. So what happened in that game?
In that game, eventually England won. Actually. With our good friend.
Sounds like that run out would have been quite crucial.
Very crucial. Would have been very crucial. A bit like a LBW appeal that they also had after they'd used up all their DRS reviews. So Tim Payne, we've said it before and we'll say it again, but we are more than happy to put together a one day DRS awareness course.
Come
join us.
We'll write the content.
Yeah, we'll feed you whatever you want, you want, buddy. We'll
charge him off.
No. He can fly over himself. But
and we'll look after the kids.
Absolutely. That's the test. Any more from the test important?
Don Best. I thought that was where you're going with the footprints. Bigged him up on the podcast. Just after Christmas.
Yeah.
He bats. He bowls.
Yeah.
He looks like a proper old school off spinner in this test.
You say he bats. Is he planning to bat for England at any point, or his batting hasn't been great in South Africa?
Am I right in thinking he's got scores of 0-0-1?
You're bang right.
Very binary. Yeah,
absolutely.
We were talking about because he bats, and when we were thinking about the balance of that side, with Jimmy Anderson coming back in, how did it work with Archer batting at 8? It looks more like best comfortable there. We haven't seen that from him, but he bowled beautifully in this test match. He bowled beautifully in the last test match and dried things up. And he didn't necessarily get the wickets that he probably deserved. But he bowled beautifully. He looked like a genuine old school off spinner.
Yeah.
Tied up an end. Mm-hmm. And I don't think anyone would have expected him to have performed the way he did in the first innings of a test match like that, taking the first 5 wickets. But for me, something we've struggled so much with in the recent past is drying up a team.
Yeah.
It's just bowling dry, letting our seamers do the work, especially when you've got someone like Mark Wood who runs in, bowls gas, but can be a little bit wide from the mark. Sometimes Sankar, another example, who will bowl wicket-taking deliveries, but who is prone to leak the odd boundary and things like that. Having someone who can go up. Didn't he go under 1 and over in the second innings?
Best.
Yeah.
You'd have to check that one out. I know Maharaj at one point in the first innings was drying up.
Yeah.
In an equally incredible manner, he bowled. He bowled exceptionally well.
And he started to get the rewards. He was bowling not just dry, but he was bowling real golden balls.
Yeah.
He was bowling wickets that would get the best batsman in the world out.
Absolutely. But it's weird, isn't it? And I you've got to kind of slightly hold back with the excitement of this England team and remind ourselves that we're not playing against one of the greatest teams. But it's as if we've suddenly now got some great spinning options, which weren't there before.
Which we haven't thought since last winter.
Yeah.
When we won a series with Sri Lanka 3.
But then our spinning options were Mohin Ali, Adil Rashid and Jack Leach.
Yeah.
Now, none of those three are in South Africa at the moment for various different reasons. And in their place, you know what, it's funny, you've got Bess, Root and...
Parkinson.
And they're managing to do it all. Yeah, you've got Parky, who doesn't seem to get much of a run. You've got Mohin Ali, who it seems like he's probably gonna start trying to do a bit of Test cricket again at some point.
Yeah. What do we make of the interview with Mo?
He was just very Mo, wasn't he?
Yeah.
You know, he seems to think that he gets a lot of blame, and maybe he does. I've always found him quite a frustrating cricketer for England. And I tell you, did you see De Kock's dismissal in the second innings on Sunday afternoon. It was just so Moeen Ali, left-handed, languid, just kind of. I remember the commentator said, "I don't know what he was even trying to do," and he just lobbed up and Mark Wood took a catch.
I've often thought about Moeen. You know when people say that Steve Smith goes into the zone when he bats, and he just becomes so focused on the game and the situation up to the point where he can block everything out and he kind of is in this kind of zen state. I feel like Mo goes into his mind palace and just forgets everything he's supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
Like the polar opposite of going to see this like complete state of calm and the ability to play every ball on its merits and just not worry about run rate and scoring or playing his favourite shots or anything. Mo goes into his and just seems to think he can play whatever shot he wants to whatever ball comes next.
Yeah.
But that's another rabbit warren we've gone down.
It is. But I think it's...
But you're right. I think that the spin stocks are looking really healthy, aren't they? I personally would happily go and play a test match in Sri Lanka in March with Moeen Ali, Rashid and Jack Leach.
Yeah.
Admittedly, none of them have played test cricket in a long while, but they had success down there. Only it would be just under 18 months.
Yeah.
When we go there again, they've had success there recently. They've shown they can take wickets. They've shown that they're all international quality bowlers. We'd happily field those three in a test match in Sri Lanka, wouldn't we?
Mm-hmm.
But it looks like we're going to go in with Bess, who's recently taken 5 for in South Africa. Parkinson, who is the kind of young tyro in county cricket, taking one day wickets, bowling big booming leg spinners, looks like a real prospect for the future. And Joe Root, who's now genuinely world class all rounder.
Exactly. From nowhere. Yeah. Did
he bowl himself a bit much on?
He did a bit, didn't he? He did a bit, but he wanted to get his Michelle. And so I think if you're captain, you've some of the shit you have to put up with.
Yeah.
I think you're well within your rights to do it. And I enjoyed there was a tweet. I can't remember exactly who he was. I think he writes for the Mail on Sunday or the Daily Mail. Our good friends, I should say, the Daily Mail, good bunch. And he's generally a political reporter. And he said that, I can't believe that Joe Root's doing this. You couldn't imagine an Australian captain doing that, would you? And then just a load of people responded saying, do you think it's a great idea to talk about Australian captains in South Africa? And he was put well firmly in his place.
I read that first. He was put firmly back in his place.
Yes. Which was good to see.
And what he'd had, one of my favourite things to watch people do on Twitter is forget that the correct outcome in a test match is generally the funniest outcome.
Absolutely.
And if the funniest outcome is Joe Root sacrificing a 50-run partnership with a pair of tailenders because he wants to get his maiden test fifer,
then fine.
I'm all for it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And there was lots of talk.
What's also funnier is watching him not get it.
Yes.
And watching him get absolutely tonked by what the guy on Twitter was referring to as Maharaj.
Maharaja. Maharaja, excellent.
So it's just a bit of casual racism in there as well for me.
Just gets it wrong. And obviously Maharaj and Root now both contributed to the new world record.
Well,
you're at the joint, equaling the world record. And do you know the other four players who've been involved in being in 28 runs off a test match over?
One of them will be Brian Lara, who...
Brian Charles
Lara, who hit 28 runs off and over from...
Your good friend, Peterson.
But not Kevin.
I think it was
Alvira. And not spelled the same either.
No, I think it was Alvira. Peterson.
The other one was a good friend of the podcast and general all-round great raconteur, George Bailey.
Robin Peterson. Yes, George Bailey. Gorgeous George.
Who had a good game of tennis with Jimmy Anson at Adelaide. So I think your line in the pictures this morning was that Brian Lara
can't believe
that he now shares a batting record with Keshav Maharaj.
Exactly, all these excellent batting records that he has from 501 not out, 400 for the West Indies, and then to share batting records with with Maharaj and George Bailey, who, you know, we've talked about his career before, his Test career before, and we won't give him any more airtime. No. I think that speaks volumes.
He finds his own airtime generally.
Exactly, George. And he does. He's very, very good at that. So yeah, should we wrap up?
Yeah, wrap up.
Review of the Test.
Good Test all round.
Great Test.
Young kids, four players under 22, three of them contributing. All four. I mean, Crawley made got us off to a great start, didn't he? The first time we batted all the way through an opening session of a Test match.
And he got his highest Test score as well. He's getting better every time.
Yeah, he looks exactly like the player you want to be batting at the top of the order, don't you? Four players under 22, all contributing. Broadly did his job as the kind of elder statesman on the side. If we're missing one thing, it's first inning runs from Joe Root, and that's what we want to see in the next Test. Probably a good way to close that out.
Yeah, and the next Test starts on Friday.
Looking forward to that one. Joburg's always a great Test, always a great crowd down there as well. England got up to third in the World Test Championship.
Fantastic. Great news.
Yeah.
Great news.
Still a mighty 146 points, about 246 points behind India.
How many points behind Australia are?
We are 116, Australia 296. Okay. So that one.
So we've got South Africa Test and then two in Sri Lanka. If we can get maximum in those three, then
so those two in Sri Lanka are big, 60 points each, aren't they? Which is why India are so far at the top.
Yeah. So yeah, this is the context we've been talking about requiring as part of it. So yeah, that is the review of the Test. The next one starts on Friday. Should we go in now to a cheeky new feature?
Let's do it.
That we've got here on the Pinch Hitter podcast. This week, we're going to call it the Over That Was. And going forward, myself and Terence are going to take it in turns to remind the other and you wonderful people at home of either a famous over or an over which means a lot to us. From back in the day. So if you're ready,
I'm excited.
You're excited. I'm very excited about this. I'm going to take you back initially to 2001.
Okay.
This isn't one of those ones.
Heady days.
Heady days. This isn't one of those ones where I'm going to give you various clues and I want you to jump in. But we'll start off with a little bit of music. Actually, this tune was number one at the time. The intro takes a little bit to kick in, but in case you can't hear it or it doesn't come through well enough on the pod, we have, that's because it's on my headphones where it's being played. So this is number one. Of course, that is Let's Dance by Five. And that was number one on the 1st of September 2001. Bit of context, globally, it was 10 days before 9/11. And this is the same day that England defeat Germany 5-1 World
Cup. So I hope this over is playing a central part in a Michelle Pfeiffer. Five is clearly the theme of the week.
There's no the five purely being the fact that they were number one. That's as far as it goes.
5-1.
And 5-1. God, missed on that. But yeah. So any idea what we're talking about at this stage?
2001.
1st of September 2001.
I'm
sure you know every day.
I have a hunch.
Mm-hmm. Go with your hunch. Michael Vaughan often goes with his hunch.
He does, and he's often wildly wide of the mark with his hunch. I think that 2001 was a series we played against the West Indies.
Mm-hmm. Keep going, yeah, I like it.
A series that's famous for a particular over.
Mm-hmm. Give me a name.
Caddick.
You're bang wrong, but I love the fact that there's these other ones as well, and yeah, maybe one day you'll surprise me.
So
with that.
Is it the same series as Captain?
It's not. We're actually talking domestic cricket.
Oh yeah.
And you know, we on this podcast we love to go down rabbit warrens or rabbit warren heggs, as I think we might end up calling them in the future. And that was why I was happy to see Terence go down.
It was 2000.
That was 2000. With that one. So yeah, so that's your context of
spoiler
the time.
Spoiler for watching it for what next week, next week's.
Yeah.
It was.
It will be, it could be that one. So the chap I'm talking about is a guy called Scott Boswell.
Oh, I know him well.
You know him well. Now, do you know the story?
Yes.
Yeah, about the over. So, bit of additional context to the game and what we're talking about. This was the Cheltenham and Gloucester one day cup final, which took place at Lords, as any good cup final should do. And that year it was Leicestershire against Somerset.
Yeah.
Now, Scott Boswell hadn't been in the greatest form going into the final, but he was still picked for Leicestershire. It was a toss-up between him and Devon Malcolm.
Oh, yeah.
For that final spot.
And Devon Malcolm would have been at the end of his career then.
Back end. Yeah, the autumn. His career, surely.
Scott Boswell would have been 26, 27?
20s. He's definitely his 20s. But you're right, mid-20s. And the debate between the two of them was who was going to share the new ball with Leicestershire's finest England bowler at the time. Any ideas, Terence, who that would have been?
Leicestershire England bowlers at the time...
Your good friend, Jimmy Ormond.
Ah.
Jimmy slash James. Ormond. So Boswell actually got the nod mainly because in the semi-final Leicestershire had defeated Lancashire, and Boswell had taken four wickets, his career best 4 for 44, but they weren't just any four wickets. The four wickets he'd taken were that of England players. He'd got Graham Lloyd, tenuous England player, but Graham Lloyd.
England player nonetheless.
Neil Fairbrother,
yep.
Your good friend Michael Atherton, and Super Freddie Flintoff, who, let's be honest, wasn't that Super Freddie at the time, but was still a scalp to have. So that was why Scotty Boswell got the nod, and I've been reading up a little bit about this particular over, and he was told by a senior figure at the club the evening before. To, and I'm putting this in quotation marks, not fuck up. So the pressure was on.
Do we know how he went? Do we know how he took that advice?
So let's see what happens. So long story short, Boswell ends up bowling a 14 ball over.
Lovely.
This was his second over in the game.
How did his first one do?
His first one wasn't so bad. I think there might have been a couple of wides in there, but it wasn't awful. And there is a link to this over we're talking about on YouTube.
Yeah, I've watched it. Repeated
on repeat, and well worth taking a look at. So
we'll put that in the email tomorrow, will we?
Absolutely legally. So six of his first eight balls were wides.
Yep.
Across his 14 balls, he bowled five wides in a row. Of his legitimate balls that he bowled, Marcus Truscothick was at the other end, and so he biffed a few of them for four. And long story short, Scott Boswell didn't come on to bowl again.
No.
After that over. And he was released by Leicestershire a month later. And not seen again playing county cricket. Now I understand he's a teacher.
Yeah.
A sports teacher. And the reason why it's always stuck in my mind, this over, is not just because I remember watching it live and thinking, ooh, he's struggling there. This is tough for him.
Yeah.
Is because I was just about to go into the upper sixth form, and I was studying the Tudors at A2 levels,
mm-hmm.
and there's the famous Battle of Bosworth as part of that, and I always refer to it as the Battle of Boswell, and as a result, it's always stuck in my mind. So that is the over that was. What are your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, love it. Weirdly, when we spoke about this feature, I had it. I was convinced you were going to do one of Caddick.
Yeah.
So I got really excited when you started talking about September, and then I was a year out. Or Scott Boswell.
Yeah.
There was an article in The Guardian that I've got in front of me now, mm-hmm. a couple of years ago, that I remember reading and just having this like sinking feeling in the pit of my stomach, like where you know exactly what he's going through,
yeah.
you know exactly how he felt when he was doing it. We've all had that absolute nightmare performance where everything goes wrong. The yips get a hold of you. Like he is the case in point of the yip. The article is called Scott Boswell and the Yips.
Yeah,
he's the archetypal Yips Safra. And he was by and large talented guy. He was a big dude, a big slingy action, solid county performer. And it just went in a matter of moments, didn't it? Never came back, never recovered. And by all accounts, he's still kind of recovering from that over. And also, I can't think of there's a beautiful symmetry, isn't there, in the fact that Marcus just Gothic was at the other end, because he speaks in depth in the article about how it made him feel, how it took him so long to recover it, how it went to some quite dark places afterwards, and it was quite such a public humiliation. But there's also a beautiful symmetry in it being just Gothic, and just Gothic absolutely taking him to task and and dispatching some of those balls.
Yeah, incredible.
And it's just a beautiful kind of symmetry around that's the nature of cricket. Mm-hmm. It's this kind of circle of life.
Yeah.
Like, people, sportsmen put themselves out there to such a degree that none of us can probably appreciate.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that article which you've put, which I'll probably put in the email tomorrow as well.
It's got a link to the video.
It's got a link to the video. There's also an article on Crickinfo, which is called A Most Public Humiliation.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it sounds like the name of a book or a BBC series on the iPlayer. Maybe they could turn it into one at some point. And there's just some really interesting parts in this, and, you know, for additional info, Somerset had won the toss and chose to bat. Jimmy Ormond's first over was uneventful, but Boswell, opening from the pavilion end, struggled for any kind of rhythm and appeared unable to adjust to the Lord's slope. As you asked about his first over, 9 runs, including 1 wide and 2 sumptuous cover-driven fours, hinted all was not well.
I'm just watching the video now. It's like he's never bowled before. Every ball is pitching somewhat, is pitching full.
Yeah.
If they pitch at all, they're pitching full. And he's wide. He's equally wide either side of the batsman.
Yeah.
So he's either throwing them way down the offside or way down the leg side, completely at random.
Yeah. And just Gothic even kind of sympathetically leaves a few.
Yeah.
And then I think probably sympathetically hits a few to stop them from being wide. Yeah. Which
there's actually one sort of about 3/4 of the way through where it's very nearly a run out, because Triscothic sort of dabs it back to him, sort of bump ball dabs it back to him, and the batsman, I don't know who the batsman is at the other end, and I don't know why he's backing up quite so much. But Boswell very nearly runs out. I've just seen the worst of the lot, but he very nearly runs him out.
Yeah.
The worst of the lot pitches kind of 3/4 of the way down, seems, and if the batsman was somewhere around gully, you could describe it as getting really big on him, because it does get steep out of nowhere. It ends up what would be like a leg gully.
Oh, poor Scotty Boswell. Yeah. There's you know, a slight correction that I mentioned earlier, that he wasn't seen again. He did actually, you know, this great article on Crickinfo. Well, so Boswell's season was not quite finished. 2 weeks later, Leicestershire played their final National League game of the year and he was recalled. A month earlier, the county had seemed destined to win the competition at Canter, but their form had fallen away dramatically. A win against Nottinghamshire would have been enough, but they lost by 5 wickets. And Boswell, he bowled 1 over before breaking down with a calf strain. It went for 18 runs and included 2 wides. He hobbled off Trent Bridge and out of professional cricket.
Wow.
Wow.
All I can think of now is he's either every kid at that school he teaches as best mate.
Yeah.
Or just a complete laughing stock. You know, think of the things that kids can take the piss out of. A funny name, a funny birthmark.
Yeah.
The video on YouTube
it's
called The Worst Over Ever. And it's there plain as day for all to see.
Absolutely. But we wish him well. We wish Scott Boswell well, and I thank him for helping me with my A2 history. So
my heart is no closer to any professional cricketer than it is to Scott Boswell.
Absolutely.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thanks, Scott. Yeah, you're a great guy. So that was the over that was. We're all looking forward to the next one from well, we'll reverse the roles.
Yeah.
And we'll have a different name for it every week as well. That's one of the rules. Them's the rules.
Really looking forward to working on it.
Absolutely, and you know, maybe have a little hint of some of the potential other overs that are out there. But we will see. Shall we? Yeah, I could have done a really good link there. But should we talk about franchising?
Franchising
the podcast, or maybe cricket franchises, that some of the franchise leagues that are out there.
Let's go for it.
Let's do that instead, shall we, as opposed to having a chat with the British Franchise Association. So we have let's see where we are. So currently we're getting towards the business end of the BBL.
Yep.
The BPL has just concluded at the back end of last week. And then the PSL, the Pakistan Super League, begins on the 20th of February. So which one of those three do you want to climb into first?
Should we start with the Big Bash?
Absolutely.
Let's start with the Big Bash, and then we'll get on to the other two.
Absolutely. Big Bash, what's been catching your eye?
Big performances from some English lads.
Absolutely.
Last couple of weeks. Alex Hales last night scored his highest... scored his highest Big Bash score.
Yep.
74 off 59, I think.
He smashed it.
Yeah. He looked really, really good. He's not in the one-day squads to go to South Africa, is he?
No. I think Morgan's still very annoyed with him for upsetting the team ethic when he had to be dropped from the World Cup squad. So, no, I understand he's not a part of that squad.
Liam Livingstone.
Oh, he's gonna. Has he played?
He played a couple of T20s. Yeah.
And he was in the
2018.
He was in the Test squad, wasn't he? For was it Sri Lanka or there was one of the overseas Test squads that he was in over the last couple of years. But
He has been called into a Test squad. Mm. Didn't he broke his hand, like quite badly broke his hand, and have it rewired?
Right.
Shortly after he made his T20 debut, before he was named, as he was named in the Test squad, before he got the chance to play.
Yeah.
He is an absolute Rolls Royce, this kid. Mm-hmm. He's big, he's strong, he's a 360 player, he's averaging just over 40 for Lancashire in the county championship. 78 off 49 last night.
Doing very well. Doing very, very well.
Great tournament.
Yeah. So what I really enjoyed was the rebirth of the Renegades.
Yeah.
Who for those of you who haven't been following the BBL avidly, they won the tournament last year.
Yeah.
They then proceeded to lose their first 9 games of this year's, and then bounce back with 2 victories. They have actually just lost this morning against the Hobart Hurricanes. But the game, their previous win, where our good friend Sabin Patel just turned the game around.
Spoke about him on the last pod. He just turned up into Australia with his boots and he was going
to
get a deal.
We were trying to work out how he'd managed to get, if there was just like a list of players who could just be called upon whenever. The Renegades, they, I think they took like 7 wickets for 7 runs.
It was when they 84 for none.
Yeah, absolutely.
Collapsed to 160 all out.
It was against the team formerly known as Banton Heat, which are now Brisbane Heat. Obviously, yeah. Tom Banton has left and replaced by ABDV.
Bad replacement.
Not bad. Yeah, pretty like for like. You might say. The Renegades just somehow came back into this game, including 3 wickets actually, 3 team wickets in a Patel over, 2 off his bowling and a run out at the end of it. That has been an exciting.
Has he got any runs?
I've not been seeing if he's got any runs.
He hasn't. I think he is playing almost as a specialist still.
Yeah.
So tournament's coming to its final, coming to its kind of end of group stages. Have we got one more round of kind of regular season games for the playoffs?
So you've got the 2 teams who have only played 11 games, the Strikers and
the Heat.
Tom Banton Heat, and then everyone plays 14 games. So I think there's 9 games.
So there's another round this week.
Another round.
Okay.
And I think the final game is on Saturday within the round, and then the top five go through to the playoffs.
Not four, as we've previously discussed.
Yeah, a little switch this year. Melbourne Stars have already qualified as winning the group. So they go straight to they can have one game to win to get to the final. They'll have another bite at the cherry if they lose that. So the current league, you've got Melbourne Stars on 20 points, Sydney Sixers on 15, Strikers on 13, Scorchers on 12, Sydney Thunder on 11, Heat 10 points in 6th, and the Hurricanes, who are in 7th with 9 points. The Renegades cannot qualify. The Hurricanes,
so it's open,
if they qualify, they'll do well. It's up for grabs. Oh, it's cool. Up for grabs. The Hurricanes, after they won today, they need it's... You know, today was must win. I think all the last two games are going to be must win as well, and they also need results to go their way.
Okay.
But yeah, very much the business end.
Lovely. Marcus Stoinis put in the best performance since we last spoke. Since we last spoke. Probably would have been better if it was the best performance since he last spoke.
Yeah.
Celebrated with a homophobic slur to one of his good mates.
Not good. Not good.
But a BBL record.
BBL record nonetheless.
So the comment that I saw was, has Marcus Stoinis taken a leaf out of Chris Gayle's book? And I wasn't sure if that was because he celebrated with his helmet on his bat.
Yeah.
Because he was
a silly comment.
Like a silly comment in the middle.
Yeah.
Or if he just dunked 147 offensive balls.
It works.
Or maybe all three.
It works with all three. So yeah, good stuff. Good stuff there. That's the BBL.
PSL.
PSL's coming up. Yeah, PSL is coming up, and that's the one which.
Battle of the English coaches, isn't it?
That's the BPL.
Bangladesh Premier League.
Yeah, let's go with the Bangladesh Premier League. That's finished now. That was won this year by the Rajashi Raja. So let's hope I'm pronouncing it right. Let's call them the Royals.
Yeah.
Because that's the Rajashahi Royals. That's the ones. They beat the Kulma Tigers. So the Royals beat the Tigers in the final. And that was the battle of the British coaches, because in the Royals corner, you had our good friend Owe Shah.
Yeah.
And in the Tigers corner, you had James Foster, who was coaching them. In the semi-final as well, you had the Chattagram Challengers, led by Nico, Paul Nixon.
Who else are you going to say?
I was going to say you had Otis Gibson, who was one of the coaches.
Sharp feels like he's one of those, just when you hear him talk, mm-hmm. he's definitely wired a little bit differently to mm-hmm. your average cricketer, isn't he? As is Paul Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
Wired a little bit differently. You hear him talk, you know, people talk about how Mikel Arteta was always going to be a coach.
Yeah.
He was wired a little bit. You do sort of get that vibe with Owe Shah and Paul mm-hmm. Nixon, don't you? Is that they mm-hmm. are kind of... Yeah, wired a little bit differently.
Yeah.
Students of the game in a way that yeah. some of their mates aren't.
Yeah.
A little bit more clued up. They play the global game. Mm-hmm. They're always keen to go and develop and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's great to see that we're seeing so many young, in inverted commas, English players and coaches going
yeah.
around the world.
Yeah, and then great to see none of them coaching in the 100.
Yeah, exactly.
So, British jobs for British people
in Bangladesh
is what we're seeing. So yeah, that's the BPL, and we look forward to seeing that come back
yeah.
again. Well, it'll be later this year, as this year's one did begin on the 11th of December, and that the player of the tournament was Andre Russell.
Basically every 2020 tournament.
Yeah, he carried them through in the semi-finals.
Have you seen his workout routine?
No, I'd love to see it.
He's part of his workout routine that he obviously talks a lot about and needs such a strong base to be able mm-hmm. to get through the line of the ball one time and say, well, part of his workout routine is he stands with a barbell on his back that
yep.
looks like it's got somewhere in the region of 30 or 40 kilos on it.
Yep.
He stands on his back, on his shoulders, as if he's about to do a squat. One leg up in the air, mm-hmm. think Mo Salah yoga celebration.
Yep.
And then he's got a kid, I don't know who this kid is, chucking a Swiss ball at him.
Excellent.
And he just stands there, rock solid, while this kid throws about 10 shots of a Swiss ball at him. And then the kid walks around him and does 10 shots from the other side.
Good old Andre, he takes it. He takes it. He's big. He's a big bloke. Bloody big bugger is what we'd what we'd say. And yeah, finishing off the franchise section. We've got the PSL, which is coming on the horizon on the 20th of February, running through to the 22nd of March. You've got six teams, and there'll be 34 matches played. So we'll have double round robin to kick off. Before going to the group stage, and there's a lot of big names playing in it.
Big English
contingent, but the best thing about the PSL this year is it's all taking place in Pakistan. I think last year they had the semi-finals and the final in Pakistan, but the security situation has been deemed that they can have the whole series, which is excellent.
Yeah, more Pakistan, more cricket in Pakistan.
Absolutely, and we talked about more podcasts in Pakistan, haven't we?
Yeah.
I think one of our goals for this decade is to record a pinch hitter pod in Pakistan.
Yeah. Just to touch on some of the players that will be there, people I'm particularly looking forward to watching. You've got Jason Ryan, Tymal Mills, for Quetta Gladiators. Looking forward to seeing how Tymal goes. It feels like his career's kind of stymied a little bit recently.
He's very good on the radio.
He's really good on the radio.
Watto is their vice captains as well. So look, always good to see how Watto.
Always good to see him back in a leadership role.
Guess he might get out LBW a couple of times, but we'll see.
Phil Salt playing for Islamabad.
Yeah.
Really keen to see how he goes. Featured in a T20 squad for England at the back end of last year.
Did he?
Was it the back end of last year? Was it earlier last year? Obviously, big hit in Sussex opener. Keen to see how he goes. Liam Livingston features again. Mm-hmm. He's doing a really good job of getting around the T20 leagues in the off-season, but really don't want him to focus on being
he's in the squad alongside Banton, Tommy B. Your good friend Tom Banton.
There's some big hitting in that side.
Yeah.
You've got Banton, you've got Kyron Pollard, you've got Darren Sammy, Liam Livingston.
Beautiful. Just great.
It's just great.
Yeah. So
and Dan Lawrence is the other one I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, yeah. Kent.
Essex. Really expecting to see big things from him. Mm-hmm. Hopefully this year.
Who's he playing for?
He's playing for the Karachi Kings alongside the likes of Liam Plunkett, Bamba Razan, Alex Hales, Chris Jordan, and your good friend Fawad Ahmed.
Excellent. That's made my day.
Yeah.
That's great. That's great news. That's what we've got. I've said it many times before. You know, it's annoying that these franchise leagues seem to mean that you can't have quite so long test series and everything kind of has to fit around each other. But they're great.
They're just great value, aren't they?
Yeah, they're great.
You can't beat watching.
Great players against great players.
Yeah. You just can't beat it. You can't beat watching Dale Steyn bowling to Jason Roy. You can't beat watching seeing how Dan Lawrence goes against some of these players.
Absolutely, and they're always played in front of full houses.
Yeah.
And I think that's a massive benefit for the individuals' careers as well. So that when they do then go and get a test call up or play for England at international level, you know, they're not only used to playing in front of 20 or 30 people.
I think that's the biggest thing, isn't it? I think what they offer is the chance to get used to playing in front of a big crowd, get used to the pressure, avoid a Scott Boswell situation.
Absolutely.
And give these young kids the opportunity to travel the world, play in different conditions, get used to playing in Pakistan.
It's a decent life as a freestyle franchiser, isn't it?
Yeah.
Freelance franchiser, I should say. So in conclusion, we are pro franchise leagues, pro franchising, and maybe one day we'll look to franchise the podcast as well.
Yeah, can't wait.
It's something we're still open to doing. Quick update on the
Scott
test
Boswell.
Match. Not Scott Boswell, actually. On the test in Harare. Sri Lanka are 205 for 3, still trading by 153 runs. Against Zimbabwe. Angelo Matthews is 51 not out. And just like it's great to see the whole of the PSL taking place in Pakistan, great to see Test cricket.
Yeah.
We'll get to see Zimbabwe back playing Test cricket. And great to see them playing in Harare. So long live Test cricket.
Long live Test cricket. Long live Test cricket in Zimbabwe. I think everyone wants to see that, don't they?
Yeah.
Everyone wants to see more teams touring Zimbabwe, more teams touring Pakistan.
Yeah.
More countries playing more tests. And I mean, if we can get Test series this year in Afghanistan, in Zimbabwe,
ooh,
in Pakistan,
beautiful.
What a world!
What a world we would be in. And also with some of these, you know, shorter and Test playing nations that haven't played quite as many games before, it always means we can use the phrase, this series does not contribute to the World Test Championship.
Which is our favourite.
Which is one of our favourite ones,
yeah.
Of the moment. So yes, that's where we are. So yeah, Zimbabwe, Sri Lanka, 205-43. Yeah. Under-19 Cricket World Cup. But before we do that, let's increase our carbon footprint by going back to England and pick up Skip en route. Skip, are you there?
Hello, Tom. Yes, I am. How are you?
Very well. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad at all. Thank you.
Good stuff. Great to have you on the Pinch Hitter podcast. And I'm sure Terence will agree it's great to have our first guest.
It's great to be able to know that it's not just me and you having a conversation for an hour and a half every evening, that we can dive away, do a bit of a fact check when we need to. I think that's something that has become abundantly clear to everyone, that we need to be able to dip away from the mic, do a fact check, get our facts straight. This isn't about Diana, but we need a third voice. We need a third party.
Absolutely.
In the race. And
a third voice, a third party, a third wheel.
A gooseberry.
With Jess Phillips dropping out of the Labour leadership race, it's good to see us increasing our pool here at the Pinch Hitter. So first things first, Skip, tell us about what your thoughts are on Pinch Hitters as a whole. When did you first come across them? What's your when you hear Pinch Hitter, what do you think?
Yeah, it's a great question. And first of all, it's just a privilege to be here, guys. I feel a bit like Simon Hughes' little truck on Channel 4 going back to the early noughties. when I think of Pinch Hitter, it reminds me of Ian Austin, sort of late 90s when Bumblefoot was going to be best all-rounder.
Lovely.
Yeah. So
lovely.
That is a lovely bit of business.
Yeah. So that's my initial sort of like, you know, big, burly, sort of medium pace who just whacks it a little bit is what comes to mind first of all, which is pretty much befitting of Terence and yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Big hairy forearms, big barrel chest.
Grumpy.
Grumpy is exactly what the Pinch Hitter email is.
Bowling a heavy ball as well, no doubt. With Ian Austin. So let's have a chat about the under-19s Cricket World Cup. Let's put you on the spot straight away, Skip. How closely have you been following it?
It's been periphery, my knowledge so far.
Really?
Yeah.
That's more than most. You mean you're not completely au fait with the Nigerian under-19s cricket team?
To be completely transparent, guys, I got a text from Terence earlier saying it might come up, and I absolutely shat myself thinking bollocks, I know nothing about this. But did a little bit of Googling, and apparently Nigeria are going quite well. Is that right?
Yeah, having a good first tournament for them.
Yeah. England lost to West Indies. I did know.
England got absolutely creamed by the West Indies.
Under 19 cricket, they bat very slowly, don't they? It's like old school one day cricket.
Do you reckon that's because they're not big enough? Like when I played my under 19s cricket, like hitting a four was like quite a big event. Like it used to get a bit of a call out in assembly, and such hit a four in his innings. Do you reckon it's because they're all just not very strong, and they're not just like, with the exception of your Akeem Cornwells, like is this just because it's all just a bunch of kids who can't really reach the boundary, or do you reckon they're all just playing for a red inca because it makes their stats look
better?
They're
certainly not all going for world records, are they? They're not looking to get 400 or 500 in the 50 overs.
Most of the Indian team have already got a triple 100 anyway.
You have.
Most of the Indian
under-19s have already got a triple 100.
Yeah. Maybe not in ODIs, not in a 50 over game.
as part of it. But yeah, no, maybe that is so. I haven't watched a great deal of it, I'll be honest. But
it's pretty good. It's pretty good actually. Yeah.
And let's say, is it low scores or is it just a case of there's a couple of very low scores and we're actually going with that? Because if you actually look back at the full men's World Cup last year, the scores were relatively low as well, weren't they?
Yeah, I think they're low. I mean, there's reasonably high scoring games. In England against the West Indies was 270, plays 185, yep. Something like that. You are getting some relatively low scores. Japan played India, which on the face of it seems like an even match. Japan were all out for 41, and then India knocked off 42 for naught inside five overs. So there are some low scores floating
about.
Are there
any players in there who are like knocking the door down for a senior call up? There's only high
in the Japan side,
particularly. Yeah, that's sort of.
You mean Kento DeBell?
I don't know. Ian
DeBell. Do you mean George DeBell?
Yeah, I don't know. Sorry.
Okay. No, he's not. I don't know if there are. In the England side's got some handy players in it.
Yeah, but no one who's quite on the knocking the door down. It's not like an under-21 football tournament where Michael Owen at the age of 17 might get pulled out so he can go and play in the full tournament.
I'm already looking forward to seeing a rundown of how the first class careers of the guys that are currently playing in the England under-19 team develops, like we saw this week from the team that won it in 1998, and it had a rundown of how everyone's career developed. And you've got Owe Shah, Rob Key, nothing else, Graham Swan. No, it was Owe Shah, Chris Schofield, Graham Swan, Rob Key, and then Paul Franks, I think, was in there.
Yeah, he was there. But it was straight off the back of a tour of South Africa as well, wasn't it? And if you there was a very good article in the Spin in the Guardian, and apparently, like the players, you know, Swan was up to a bit of mischief, and by the
is that the one they got sent home from, or was that an A tour?
That was an A tour because by the time they got to this World Cup, apparently the management sat them down and just said, look, well, these rules are here for a reason. Just do your own thing if you want to. And I think the management were expecting them to say, okay, yeah, we're really sorry, we probably should listen a bit more. And Swan was just like, well, no, we said, okay, cool, and literally did our own thing. but said like the management were just so fed up with them at the end of a long tour that they just said, oh, just do whatever. And as it turned out, they actually won it. Have you heard the bit about the run rate that how they got through to the final?
No.
All it is
in short, all it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, it's one. This is why Alan Border ends up wearing a Hawaiian shirt, because he gets Dick of the Day. Because I think the only way, and we'll have to check it for sure, but the only way that England could qualify for the final was by beating Australia within a certain number of overs, hence getting their run rate up to a certain level. And none of the Australians, who, you know, are renowned for their intelligence, didn't catch on.
Always doing their homework.
Yeah, didn't catch on. And it was something even greater that maybe both teams were sharing the same viewing gallery. And on the television, they were talking about the run rate. And so England asked if they could turn the television down so that the Aussies wouldn't catch on. And they didn't. So then they had Dick of the Day. And Dick of the Day went to Alan Border, a.k.a. AB, who then had to wear a Hawaiian shirt.
I've heard worse Dick of the Day punishments.
Absolutely. But well, you'd end up having a pylon. With him as well. But like you, I'm very much looking forward to in, let's say, 2040 or 2042, reading about what's happened to those the current players.
Yeah, right. I think that's probably. Oh, Hamid El Kadri is the one I wanted to talk about.
Japanese.
He's a lad who's
no,
he's the he's playing for England. He's the guy who was born in Afghanistan and got signed by Derbyshire. Made his first class debut for Derbyshire in 2017 when he was 16, and took a fifer, took a first class fifer.
Excellent.
A couple of years ago, and I think he's recently signed for Kent. I could be wrong.
Any predictions of where he might be in 20 years' time?
Kent.
Just in Kent, just somewhere in Kent.
Just playing for Kent.
Playing somewhere.
But yeah, he's the only one that has had any sort of first class career of any great repute to date.
And before we crack on away from the under 19s, I think a special mention to Nigeria under 19 player Elijah Olale, and I hope I pronounced that right. Olaleye.
You almost certainly haven't.
And he top scored with 21 in their 61 all out against Australia, which should actually get a lot of credit for that score because nobody else got into double figures apart from good old EX Truz, who scored 14, and that was 14 wides. So special shout out to Elijah. Good knock there, getting 21, which I believe is more than a third of their overall score. So, yeah.
Is that a bannerman?
Is that a what?
A bannerman? Is that a contest for the highest percentage of the team runs, a record set in the first ever test match?
Well, that is, I mean, I don't know what the record is in under-19s cricket World Cups, but yeah, what percentage was the one you mentioned?
Don't know. Should we stop talking about the under-19s World Cup?
Best jump off.
Because the player's not as strong, which is Trigg's original point. So you've got to bear that in mind with your rest.
Yeah, that's true.
Is the ball heavier?
Yeah,
maybe. Ball heavier, though. So should we have a chat about...
If Ian Austin's playing,
about
is.
What else has been going on in South Africa?
We've got a third party.
Touched on it earlier in the pod.
We've got a third party. Let's put him to good use and get his thoughts on... what's going on in South Africa. We touched a little bit earlier on how Sam Curran was getting on, how we thought the young boys had done, but keen to hear someone other than just you and me talk about what's going on in South Africa. What are your thoughts, Skip? What's gone well? What's gone badly? What are you keen to see more of? How do you think we're going to get on next week?
Day two of test number two. It's been quite good for English cricket, hasn't it, really? But I thought Sam Curran missed a bit of an opportunity this last test. New ball, that's his job, isn't it, really? Swing it a little bit, and didn't really do much, did he? He got a nice few in the first innings of the bat, but I thought maybe a bit weak with the ball, which was a shame.
What do you think about this idea that we were sort of talking about earlier? But it feels like he might become like the ultimate bits and pieces cricketer. Like that might be his actual job, which is a little bit different to being an all-rounder.
Bits and pieces cricketer, which he's almost defined to be better at the role he's not picked to do. Like if you pick him to bowl, he'll start scoring runs. If you start backing him at like 7 or 8, he's bowling. Well, he'll be an awesome bowler, won't he? But I
like that. He's just obtuse.
Yeah, but he's quite good. I don't know. Don Best looks gritty, doesn't he? He looks like he's had a year in Yorkshire, sort of like. He's aged beyond years. Whereas Sam Curran just looks, he could be in an under-19 World Cup, and no one would know.
Because he's not strong enough.
But I think that is a good point that kind of like whatever Sam Curran you tell him to do, he goes and does the other one really well. And it reminds me of when Stuart Broad first broke into the team, and some of the conversations. Yeah. Is he a batsman who bowls or is he a bowler who bats? And let's be honest, nowadays he's very much a bowler. But it was good. It's good to have those.
Have you seen that article that came out in the week about? Or over the weekend, I think it came out actually, about comparing Stuart Broad and Steve Smith after the first 10 tests of their career.
Is he better at batting? Must have had a better batting average or something?
So they both got. So Steve Smith, after 10 tests, was averaging 31 with the bat and 46 with the ball. Stuart Broad was averaging 33 with the bat and 45 with the ball.
Brilliant.
I literally had almost identical stats, apart from Broadie was slightly better at both of them.
Perfect.
And they both debuted at 21.
That's good. A question, actually. What do you guys think of Dom Sibley? Because I love the fact that we've got another opening batsman who is obdurate, looks like he can score some difficult runs. But for me, I just can't get over the way he sort of wanders around. So my lasting memory of being like 16, 17, starting to play men's cricket. It's like blokes in their like early 30s who drink a little bit in the week, probably a few too many takeaways, and just got really fat asses and cricket whites.
He's got a big old badonkadonk, hasn't he?
I just see him walking between overs, sort of in the slip court. And just, he doesn't really look like an athlete, does he? But does that matter? Or is that a throwback to?
Currently doesn't matter. Might come to matter once he has to start doing anything other than just grinding out long opening partnerships. I'm keen to see how he goes in Sri Lanka. Because like you say, he is not an athlete, is he? But his power, you know how Cook doesn't sweat, and famously Prince Andrew doesn't sweat. Dom Sibley's got their sweat.
I reckon Dom Sibley's been to Pizza Express as well.
In Woking, probably. I reckon he has. He has got an air of royalty about him, isn't he? I think he's a good player. I think right now he's doing exactly what we need him to do. But he does kind of give you this air of only ever being about 50% concentrated, doesn't he? Do you know what I mean? Like on the get, obviously when he's batting, he goes into his mind palace and there's no getting to him. But you do feel that when he's batting, he's not one of those players who's ever going to be like, you're never going to say about him, you just can't keep him out of the game.
No.
Are you?
No. Like, he's very much an Alistair Cook. Like he doesn't care if his strike rate is at 30. But I'm all for that. I'm all for packing your top three with players who will happily bat all day and not get a century. That is perfect.
Do you reckon I always used to think that nets were way better than actually playing a cricket match because it was the same as a cricket match, but you didn't have to field. I really feel like Dom Sibley is probably of that mindset. If he could just turn up to the net and face a bowling machine and just prod everything back halfway up the pitch for 5 days, that'd be basically perfect. Yeah. No high fives, which you know he's not very good at.
Struggles.
No sweating, which we know he's exceptionally good at. He's not running third man to third man. I think he's a specialist net batsman.
I'll tell you what he has not in his favour as well. And you're kind of talking about him, he's kind of like not so much looking like an athlete, is because he only opens the batting and generally fields in relatively close against the spinners, he's always got body armour on. Maybe he's just one of those people that we will never know his true shape unless we stalk him on his holidays just to get that one pick that we can sell to, again, our good friends at the Daily Mail. Maybe that is the answer to all this.
Maybe he's like Krang from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. He's got like a little Sam Curran inside him driving him.
Yeah, I just like him. He's like a throwback to me. He looks like a sort of lad. He's played a bit of minor county cricket, maybe. He's got an MCC membership. Probably plays with a good club team. He's got a nice job, but you're coming back and play 100 over cricket at the weekend and just score 70 not out off 450 overs.
He's just got on the grad scheme at PwC.
Yeah, good bloke. Everyone likes him.
He's absolutely balls deep in Infernos most weekends.
Absolutely. I reckon he's got a really nice Salix knocking about from maybe 2005 or something.
I've got one.
But obviously with him and with Don Bess and the team, we are all very, very excited about the day that we have a test wicket, caught Sibley, bowled Bess. That is what we are all waiting for. And when we do...
Because it'll be two-thirds of the Dominics to have ever played for England involved in one wicket. Is that why we're excited?
That'd be the main bit as well, yeah. If it was caught Sibley, bowled Cork, it'd be just as great. just very much looking forward to all these moments coming true at one point.
Mm-hmm.
Dominic the Bess, they'd call it, wouldn't they? Probably that'd be the headline.
Many an option. Dominators, maybe something like that. There's many a pun to be had on it.
What else you got, Skip? What else you like him? Well, what else you enjoy him? What else you see?
I think it was Nassi. NASA, I should say, not Nassi.
Nassi.
He's a dog, born in Mumbai but raised in England, but can just the troubles happen. It's called Nassi. NASA, I think, was saying that Ollie Pope is going to move up to number three. And I really like Ollie Pope. I try and keep quiet about it because I feel like I'm going to jinx him. But nothing's going to make me more cross if he starts batting number three and he just ruin him.
I think it was Vaughan. It was Vaughan, wasn't it? Yeah, it
sounds like Vaughan. Mm.
Feels very Vaughan, doesn't it?
But no, just leave him be. And I think I quite like having a really boring top three. But just,
yeah.
And then let Root, Stokes, Pope, and you've got to pick Ben Stokes, haven't you now?
Yeah, I just read an article on the way home actually about does Butler really, really need a score in this test? And I think he probably does. I think the last test of the series going into Sri Lanka where Folks was man of the match, mm-hmm. man of the series and man of the match on debut last time. Butler needs a score, doesn't he? Big time.
Do you think Keaton Jennings again as a horses for courses? Just
oh, we love a horse for course. We love a horse for course.
Oh yes, we've got a whole podcast lined up immediately after the squad for that tour comes out, just to talk about horses for courses.
So there's every chance he will be, particularly with Rory Burns getting injured.
Did you just say there's every chance he will be? Because that's fantastic, if so.
Zebra chance, not a chance, but zebra chance. He will be. You'd be lying to say that isn't the case.
Very good, yeah. Not a horse.
Very good.
No, and also it's not cheatering to pick horses for courses. Mm-hmm. Right. What are we doing?
We were talking about I don't know how we got into Keaton Jennings. We talked about that. Skip's very happy. Skip's enjoying it all. And he's started looking ahead to Sri Lanka, which is
should we talk
better.
About Rabada's demerit points?
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah. We touched on it a little bit earlier.
Are you asking my opinion on Rabada? Yeah, I love him.
Yeah, let's get your opinion on Rabada.
90 miles an hour and they're aggressive, and I think leave him be, but. He's had it done how many times now? Because it was last time they were in England, wasn't it? He got banned again. Yeah. So
multiple points.
Dim, is he not listening? Is he not being told, just don't do it? I quite like it personally, but the rules say no. Computer says no, so he's just got to take a spell, hasn't he, really?
Absolutely. Well, that's what we were saying earlier, was saying that he's just a bit of an idiot. If he thinks that he can do it, and you know, you've been permanently, persistently warned to stop doing it, and given points against it, it's like, you know, it's like someone with points on their license just driving really fast and being annoyed that they get more points on their license.
I think there's a part of it though, which is a no-brainer. Maybe just not a particularly funny guy, because if Stokesy does it,
yeah.
Stokesy gets quite animated. Doesn't really give you a send off, but. Everyone loves Ben Stokes, don't they? And the players sort of do as well. He does it in a different sort of way.
Yeah.
Whereas Rabada just comes across just in a more dislikable manner for whatever reason. And I think it must really annoy him that maybe he just wants to be, you know, pumped up, animated, but just a slightly better bloke.
Yeah. No, but I think as with all things ICC, maybe we should go through all the rules, and maybe they should trial, if they're going to trial 4-day tests, they're going to start talking about things like that. Then maybe they should trial allowing celebrations for fast bowlers, and then just see what happens. Because I think that it would add another dimension to the game.
Fast bowlers, then, do you think?
It'd be great to see them put in some ridiculous caveat, like it should be just for fast bowlers, but. Probably should be for all. But I do think the thing with a fast bowler is obviously they've got the justification of their follow through that they can end up in the batsman's grill.
I think it's a really nice distinction there, because you can almost have it like a no ball. You have to replay it. If it's over, say, 90 miles an hour, fine. 88.9,
yep.
Sorry, you've got a band there. It wasn't fast enough. Or they could do what in the follow through, because you might be someone who just bowls a heavy ball and doesn't really follow through, in which case you have all your bowlers running for every ball, which is, I don't know how that'll work, but yeah, some interesting.
Yeah. Well, it's the game needs to innovate, and that's why they're bringing in the 100. So I'm all for things like that, as that being added to the mix as well. Terence, are you still there? He's not. Where's
no,
he gone?
He's off riding.
Can you hear him?
Animal based puns or something.
Yeah. So on a heavy Google. Yeah. a Google moment for him. Well, let's carry on for a little bit. Even in his absence, are there any other tidbits from the South Africa tour that you've picked up at the moment?
But it's what to do about Jofra, which I think, three fifers in seven tests, which is sort of breaking all records, but somehow he's getting such lots of negative press, and it seems like he's the next English sports star the press seem determined to tear apart for whatever reason. And he's a young lad, he bowls quick, and he's probably a bit tired. He's got a bad elbow. Test cricket's hard. And I just feel
And he's not really stopped, has he, since he did the World Cup. Well, got into the England team in the tournament before the World Cup, then played the World Cup.
Terence?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
We all back?
We are back. Where did you go?
Don't know, I could hear you. I was having a lovely time. I was listening to you two talking, and then all of a sudden someone went, "Are you still there?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm still here," and then carried on listening, and then realised that you obviously couldn't hear me.
And then just pulled the plug on the whole thing.
Just pulled the plug on the whole thing. If I'm not playing, I'm taking my ball back. And we're all going home.
Exactly. So I mean, we don't even need to tell you what you missed.
I didn't miss anything.
You were hearing it. What were you going to say about Jofra, Trigg? Why don't you jump in on that?
Well, I agree with Skip. He's just a bit tired, isn't he?
Yeah.
Before you do, Trigg, the one thing I've realised is this is my first ever podcast experience. I started with the two of you, and then Terence disappeared. So it's just me and Tom. Talking about Jofra, next thing I know, I'd been cut off, but I was still talking about Jofra for 30 seconds. And I was like, what do you think, Tom?
The pinch hitter is nothing if not professional.
Absolutely.
And that is what I want. I'm not too concerned about Jofra. He's tired, isn't he? I mean, I do feel like... Do you know how everyone's kind of... There's this kind of... like narrative underneath the Harry and Meghan thing that everyone is kind of very
you've gone there.
Is kind of very anti-Meghan, and she's not hit it off with the Queen, and the British public have never taken to her in the same way that they've taken to Kate and stuff. I'm like, well, I've seen universal praise for their decision, universal love for Meghan for being a fantastic 21st century addition to the royal family.
Do you not read the Daily Mail?
No, I don't actually.
Okay, carry on.
So you're saying Joff needs to move to Canada? Is that the solution?
No, I'm saying that he needs to settle down, marry a suit superstar. I'm saying that there's this kind of vernacular, this narrative that he's kind of been made a scapegoat for things and that he's being treated more harshly than everyone else. And I just can't see it. Like, I don't know where this narrative is other than people talking about the fact that it exists. I think the general narrative from anyone that's kind of knows their shit, is involved in the game, pays a bit of attention, is that he's just knackered and he's got a bad elbow.
Yeah.
And then there's this kind of underlying, oh, well, he's being made a scapegoat, isn't he? No, not really. Like, everyone's just judged it pretty fairly on its merits that he can't bowl with a kookaburra ball yet because he's never done it before. He can't bowl in South Africa because he's never done it before, even though he got a 5 for his first test. Chill out, leave him be. I think we're fine.
I met Sajid Mahmood in a bar in Manchester.
Oh, now we've started.
Yeah. A little name drop there to kick us off.
Surrounded by birds, was he? I bet.
Yeah. He's just wearing a vest top, actually. No
was he actually?
Yeah, vest top, yeah.
Good man.
What was the bar?
It was on Deansgate Locks.
Okay.
I can't remember the exact bar now, but I'd had a couple of beers. I thought I'd say hello, and he was lovely. And I said to him, I love fast bowling, and I said, when I see you on TV in a one-day game or whatever on Sky, why aren't you just running the bowl 90 miles an hour? That's what everyone wants you to do. If you're just bowling 80 miles an hour, you're better bowlers. And he just said, bowling 90 miles an hour is really, really hard. Mm-hmm. And your body just aches and it's really painful. So you can do it maybe 15 times a year, which is probably what Arch has done, 4 overs, 20, bit of one-day cricket. And if you're playing in the public eye, every time you watch him bowl, you expect to bowl 95 miles an hour. And I think it's just really, really hard. And
I like how it took you a drunken conversation with Saj Mahmood to work out that bowling 90 miles an hour was really hard on your body.
No, but especially with archers, it makes it look so easy, doesn't it? You just sort of ambled up and pinged it down. And you forget that, actually, that's really hard to do. That's why none of us can do it.
Yeah. I think it's... I think
there's multiple reasons why I can't do it.
Yeah.
Just a good sportsman. I think it's all part of Brand Archer, personally.
I
think he's seen the opportunity. You know, we've all heard about tennis elbow, and now he's just going to make fast bowler's elbow really popular, because no one else has ever not bowled because they had a bad elbow, have they?
well, actually, this is quite random. I'm actually suffering.
Saj Mahmood.
No, not Saj. No, I've actually been suffering with a bit of tennis elbow myself this past week and a half.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, not bowling. Just
repetitive strain injury, was it?
Actually, yeah. So I've got to do some physio exercises. I'll have a go at bowling the weekend. Let you know, my speed.
Yeah, cool. But yeah, I think you're right. I think it's Brand Archer, isn't it? Lollapin. Yeah. Super chilled. I don't think we need to worry about Archer's elbow.
He'll come good. We're having a year of kind of getting to know him, getting an idea about what he's, you know, he's done the usual blast, you know, jumped onto the into the limelight, done very well. Yeah, you typically have a bit of a dip off after that, and then we'll actually know what he's all about.
What
probably just in time for when Broad has to retire, or Jimmy has to retire, and then great, be perfect.
Just in time to win another World Cup, won't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah, do you know who his best mate in England team is, or do we have any ideas who it might be?
Oh, I really, really, really hope it's Sam Curran. Just because they look brilliant together. I feel like him and Joss Butler would just be the chillest best mates ever. But part of me also hopes he's really good mates with Dom Sibley.
I was going to say Sibley as well. Yeah.
But it's an interesting concept, isn't it? Like, who is definitely best mates? So there was that whole thing about Mo and Adil Rashid, like, wouldn't leave each other's side, would they?
The spin twins,
yeah.
Secret drinkers, aren't they?
Yeah. But I feel like Archer, it's either someone super intense, like a Sam Curran.
Yeah, best, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Lovely. Someone super intense and a bit weird, or someone like Dom Sibley, who just operates on completely the same plane as him. And you just look over in the dressing room, and they're just sitting there talking about the Viz comics or
the fantasy teams
or something like that, and just like completely operate on a different plane to everyone else. Which is sort of like how I feel people like. Do you ever look at Carl Sinclair and Ellis Genge in the rugby team and go, you're just in your own little world? I'd love Archer to be part of that little duo in the England dressing room.
Well, what, sort of cross dressing rooms and just have mates with the rugby
team? Like, I look at Carl Sinclair and Ellis Genge and just go, you two are clearly so in your own little world in that dressing room. You see, there's always videos of doing impressions and stuff like that. I love it when you get a little two-man clique in a dressing room. And I think Arch would be a prime candidate to be someone's best mate, just operating on a completely different, super chilled out plane to where everyone else is. Mark Wood described him as being able to sleep on a washing line.
Beautiful, beautiful. Mm-hmm. That's I'd love to see it. Let's see it. Does that mean literally, kind of leant back on a washing line, or what's his?
In my head, he's kind of lying across it like a hammock. Yeah. Like, so one of the garden washing lines, it's like a square, so it spins.
Yeah.
Not one of the old
school
Coronation Street ones.
Yeah, okay.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's doable.
I had him like the... you know how his wrist flicks as you believe
it's
ball? I had him with two sort of wrist flicks like pegs. Just, sort of
just hanging.
Yeah.
Just hanging like an S-shape.
Yeah.
Nice.
Doing what he does. Shall we close off with a bit of breaking news that we had earlier today in the cricketing world? South Africa just doing what kind of all cricket boards and cricket teams that have lost their way and deciding to appoint a new ODI captain before the Test series has finished, with QDK, Quinton de Kock, now taking over the ODI team in place of the greatest Faf that ever has been, Faf du Plessis. And obviously we've got a 3 ODI series coming up with games on the 4th, 7th and 9th of February. At the end of the test series, they've also named a squad full of names that I've never heard of, and so
that's the sort of insight you get here.
Yeah, can't really comment on much of it. But any thoughts on the captaincy switch?
I love that it's solving a problem that isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
We've lost the Test series. Faf hasn't scored many runs. Let's get a new ODI captain.
Yeah.
Perfect. But the most beautiful bit of symmetry is that it's England not just ending a South African Test captain's career.
Oh, beautiful.
But it's England ending a South African Test captain's career on Graham Smith's first Test series as captain, on his first watch.
That is good.
Delicious symmetry. And it's Joe Root, who's been, and I think it's fair to say, otherwise a wildly useless captain.
Yeah.
so not in the Graham Smith mould as a cricketer or as a captain. But he's done to Graham Smith what Graham Smith did to the likes of Joe Root for his entire career and finish off the captain. Bit annoying because Faf is beautiful, that we won't see any more of him in those. Probably half a size too small shirts that he wears.
Yeah.
The thing with me and Faf.
We know about you and Faf, mate.
Yeah. No, it's more, I always feel like when Faf is skipped, because he's best mates with AB, the coach is just like, Faf, go on, give AB a test.
Yeah.
And it's just like, if you cut Faf out, that's South Africa fully just getting rid of AB.
Can you bring your brother? Can your brother play?
He's like, oh, Ravan Shaw, I've got to make those counter.
Text him. We can go and go. But there's talk about AB coming back, isn't there, for the T20 World Cup?
He fancies it.
He said he fancies it. He said he fancied it before the World Cup, but it was logistically a bit of a challenge, wasn't it, to get him back at such short notice. But how good a story would that be if he comes back to captain at the T20 World Cup? Is he playing in the 100?
Yeah, it would be good.
I don't know. That's another thing. Nothing for us to have a look at, hasn't it?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think he is.
Have you spoken about 100 yet? Has that come up?
Came up on a previous episode. Again, we will have a horses for courses selection debate dedicated to what horse do you select when the course is a course that's never been run by any cricketer before? And what do you want to see? Who do you want to talk about? Who do you want to select for a specific course?
No simpler than that, is it?
I was just
having a little look through their squad, and I saw there was a Milan in there, which is, I got very excited thinking, is that the same Milan who has been one of the most Brigadier Blocks at the
time? Yeah. He's giving Denley a run for his money. Not.
Yeah.
Orf's got great arms as well, that Milan.
He's got fantastic arms.
Yeah, we were talking about Faf before, weren't we? Yeah, Milan's got huge ones as well. It's not the same. It's not the same one.
Who is it?
It's Janeman Milan.
Oh yeah, isn't it his brother?
I don't know.
I think it might be. If not, this is terrible content. If it's not his brother, but
it's his brother.
It is his brother.
Oh, it is. Yeah. Confirmed.
And what's the relationship with David Milan?
Is there one?
No, but they're just seeing if there was.
Oh, no, there's not. David Milan's brother is a cricketer, as was his dad, both in South Africa. Brilliant. But it's not these two.
Brilliant. Perfect. Well, shall we close it off there?
Sounds like it might be time, doesn't it?
Some great shouts of, oh, he's got the same surname. Crawley's that Crawley's dad? Yeah. No, Zach Crawley is not related to John Crawley.
Deadly Dawson, he got a shout out earlier as well.
Who?
Deadly Dawson.
Yeah, Liam and Richard are not related, and Anthony McGrath and Glenn McGrath are also not related. You heard it. You heard it here first. But no, it's been a cracking episode. It's been great to get a third wheel in, much more than just a third wheel. Let's do this again very soon. So I'm going to sign off and say bye. And if you boys could do the same, we will see you very soon on the next Pinch Hitter podcast.
To our folks.
Thank you. See you soon.
Bye-bye. Bye.